Today, we have the pleasure of visiting with one of our own, Philip Cortez, who grew up here in El Paso, went to Cathedral High School, and his latest book is Pancakes for Dinner. Philip, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, as we were talking before the program started, we were talking a little bit about what got you started and interested in all this. And I'm not sure if I mentioned that you were one of my students in the past, and Sheila Wolfords and a lot of other people mm-hmm. who are familiar here in El Paso. But have you always had an interest in writing and writing books, specifically children's books, or did this just come out later?
Well, I think I've always had an interest in it. I know I've always had an interest in reading. And growing up in Horizon City, back before it was what it is now, I mean, it's exploded, population, business, things like that. But, you know, back in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, when I was growing up out there, it was nothing. There was really not a lot to do. It was just in the middle of the desert. And I so looked forward to the bookmobile when it came every summer. You know, I could still smell the bookmobile and feel the air conditioning when you walked in. And it was just a trailer, but it was filled with books. And I fell in love with reading, and I tell students this all the time. It was the reading that took me out of West Texas in triple-digit heat in the summertime with nothing to do. And it took me to other places. You know, I could be floating down that Mississippi with Huckleberry on a raft, or I could be yearning for dogs where the red fern grows and hunting and going through the forest and having adventures. And so reading these stories, something kind of flipped in me and switched. And the more you read, the more you want to share your own stories and take readers on their own adventures. And so in my mind's eye, I'm still 8 years old anyway. And, you know, write what you know, right?
You come from a family of what is it, three brothers?
Four
brothers. Okay, so
at last count, yes.
The bookmobile goes to Horizon City, and I would imagine that because you were only allowed to check out a certain amount of books, I remember that's the way it was when I grew up in Anthony, but then you probably exchanged books with your brothers and kind of discussed the stories that they were reading or not reading.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, it's funny because the door would swing open to the bookmobile and this wave of air-conditioned air, right? This would hit you, and it would take away the heat that we experienced walking to the bookmobile. And I can only imagine the people in that mobile looking at us, this ragtag group, this like motley crew of five boys, and just kind of thinking, oh man, it's two books per kid. That's 10 books. I hope we get them back. I hope they're not too scuffled and dog-eared. But yeah, it was awesome because I walked away with 10 books because, you know, in addition to their books, I knew that we were getting a package deal in that sense. So going to the bookmobile by myself, I was limited, and then it would come back in 2 weeks. And the hardest part was, okay, how do I not read this today? And then 13 days later, just twiddle my thumbs waiting for the bookmobile. And yeah, having brothers get their own books, that helped pass that time. They wound up checking out books that I wanted to read anyway, which was good. And yeah, we shared them, traded them. But, you know, I think that for those 2 weeks, that period waiting from the bookmobile to return, that was kind of hard. It was bittersweet. Definitely walking back home from the bookmobile, you had this awesome information and this story that you could read. But, you know, you had to take it back. That was the bitter part of it. You had to take it back.
And the fact that you had four brothers, and so again, you said 10 books, were they all significantly different so that you would be reading different genres?
I'm not sure if they were significantly different. My three younger brothers would definitely read, you know, stuff that I had probably already read or might not have been my grade level. But my older brother, Steve, he would take these books, like make and do books, projects, things like that. And we were into, all five of us were really into books like that. You know, it was, how can we use our hands? Or what excuse can we have for stealing my dad's tools? and leaving them in the desert somewhere. I mean, somewhere in Horizon City, my dad's tools are scattered across the landscape somewhere from all the forts we built and things like that. But that's what we did. I mean, books, reading books, the extension of what we were reading, or certainly what I was reading, you use that imagination, and more than just trading ideas and trading books and talking about different genres, you kind of go play it out in the desert. And you build forts, and you imagine, and you make believe, and that could be with books. It could be with a cool movie you saw, you know, growing up when you saw a movie like Back to the Future back in '85 in the mid '80s. Then we were all dreaming about those floating skateboards. That I'm sure there's a kid out there on a floating skateboard right now, those hoverboards. But the books definitely was the spark that flipped a switch in your imagination, where you took it from the page and kind of acted it out in the desert or recreated it. You know, every kid plays cowboys and Indians or cops and robbers when they're kids.
Sometimes there's a librarian who likes the fact that, you know, she sees young people going in there and checking out books. So she wants to encourage you, or he wants to encourage you. And there's a favorite book of mine and my youngest daughter called A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. And it's about, you know, this little girl wants to read just about every book available. And so she gets requests from the librarian. What could I do? So did you ever get any type of requests, you know, like from the librarian, or saying, you know, hey, have you tried this? You maybe should be interested in this, etc.
No, not necessarily. Yes and no. So not to that extent. But I remember Sister Lorraine at Cathedral High School would often recommend different books for me to read, thinking, you know, you'll like this book, you know, or you should really read this book. Tobias Wolff. I was introduced to Tobias Wolff through Sister Lorraine. Not personally. I didn't meet the author, Tobias Wolff, but his work. And there's some really, really good stuff that he's written that could a 16, 17, 18-year-old guy at an all-boy private Catholic school might be able to relate to. And that's also something that I discovered through many, many years of reading, obviously, is and stories that these authors tell, is that there's always something that we can gravitate to. And good for your daughter, you know, for loving that book. And I think that I would hope my daughters can really start falling in love with reading the way I did as a young boy.
As you mentioned, going to an all-boys Catholic school, some people might have thought, well, you know, there might have been limitations there at that library. But at the same time, I'm thinking, well, it opens actually more doors. So tell us a little bit about how it changed from going to that bookmobile to all of a sudden going to a library in high school.
Well, I think it's all about perspective, number one. Okay. You know, when you talk about kids that live in inner cities, like in New York, and they've got access to great public libraries. I mean, libraries are, you know, our libraries don't get enough credit. Here in El Paso, our library system is phenomenal. You know, I'm a regular visitor of these libraries. But it really is all about perspective, because that kid growing up in Horizon in the middle of desert might not have had anything to do, or that desert was a blank canvas for the imagination to just go crazy with no limitations whatsoever. Right. And so I appreciated the bookmobile in the sense that I had a finite amount of material to draw from, and I needed to make the most out of it. And I think I might have carried that through to Cathedral with Sister Lorraine. And I would go visit her early in the morning before school started. It's just one of those things that I really looked forward to. And I could still see the sun coming in through the windows, the window panes, and hearing her voice. But I didn't see any limitations in those old hallways. You know, the big joke at Cathedral at the time was the only thing holding up the school was the many years of coats of paint. Every year they painted the building from the inside, and that was the only thing holding up the old building, right? And my class was the last of the old building at Cathedral High School. So I like to think that a lot emerged from that. From the surface, you may have thought one thing, but the perspective that you had from within those halls and from within that library and from within libraries in general. I just think libraries get a bad rap.
And at what point you came to the University of Texas at El Paso, and as I mentioned, you were one of my students. You were one of Sheila Wolfert's students. You worked at the Prospector. At what point did you decide, Philip, that you were going to try your hand at writing children's books?
Everybody kind of tries the children's book thing because they think it's easy, and it's not.
It's harder.
It's hard. Yeah, it is really hard. I mean, you have to more than just think like a kid and have some whimsical idea and kind of put it down on paper. But I think in the English department back then, when you walked into that building here at UTEP, in the corridor, the front lobby area, there was a door, and it was Ben Sines' door. And first of all, I couldn't believe that this author, this local guy, you know, you only see their names on book spines in the library, but you never really get to meet the people. And when I saw that this living human being, this living, breathing human being was actually all this time, like literally I could throw a rock and hit that building from where we're sitting right now. All this time he was there. Here was a resource. I think that's when I really wanted to just pick his mind, you know, just kind of like a pest. And I think I was a pest at the time. I kind of hung out in the lobby every now and then and talked to him every now and then. And, you know, he was nice. He granted me the time while I was probably bothering him. But Gary Soto, another guy that came to El Paso on a book tour, and I got to meet him. And he, you know, wrote a book. At the time, it was a children's book called Chato's Kitchen. And I got to meet the illustrator as well. And he took favor on me in the sense that I didn't have the cash to go to some fancy little dinner thing that they were throwing for him and Susan. You had to pay money to go to this event, and I certainly didn't have the cash, but he basically told me, hey, come on over and just show up anyway and say you're with me. And I did. And he did something tremendous. I mean, he gave me a book, Baseball in April, which is still one of my favorite books, short stories. And he signed it to Philip, future author. And I think that was the moment right there, because I was able to share the idea that I was really wanting to do this. He listened to me, he didn't laugh, and he validated it with his signature and that short little message on one of his books. And maybe he did that to 1,000 kids a month. Who knows? But that was my moment. You know, I'd love to believe that I was the only guy that he ever did that to, but I'm pretty sure that's not true.
And this latest book that we're talking about, Pancakes for Dinner, you were telling me before that this was actually a tradition when you were growing up.
Yeah.
As far as having pancakes for dinner. And, you know, we tend to, I think as Americans, we tend to kind of get a little pigeonholed as like, well, we can only have eggs for breakfast, and we can't have oatmeal for dinner, and I can eat oatmeal every day.
You know, beans and sopita, beans and sopita.
Yeah, beans
and
sopita.
Mom, what's for dinner?
Yeah.
Beans and sopita. That was every day growing up. That was every day growing up. It was beans and sopita, and it was cream of wheat or malto meal in the morning. Every day. I mean, with five brothers, with five boys, that's a lot of mouths to feed, especially when you're growing up. And you eat like a horse, right? And so as we're all teenagers at the same time, she should have bought a lock for that fridge. You know, I think we were just one step away from her chain bolting the fridge. I mean, the kitchen was always open. And literally, I mean, if we had our way and had cereal every day, for example, that's easily 2 to 3 gallons a week. You know, and when you're on a budget and you got a family of seven, that's a lot. So pancakes on Saturdays, that was pancake day. That's when you could sleep a little later. But she didn't do that because of the Saturday morning cartoons. You actually woke up earlier on your own accord, not forced. And she'd wake up and she'd make pancakes. And I just remember how awesome that was. I always looked forward to Saturday. Saturday was awesome because I could take my time at the table in that rush to go to the bus stop. The house smelled great. The smell of pancakes and baking in general, I like to bake now, puts me in a great mood. And so I kind of carried on that tradition in my own family. And so anytime something special has ever occurred, I always kind of tell my wife, hey, guess what? Pancakes for dinner. And the follow-up is, what now? What happened now? I mean, what good news do you have for me? And so when my daughters were born, we had pancakes for dinner. You know, I took everybody to IHOP. When this book, Pancakes for Dinner, was released on September 15th this past year, we had pancakes for dinner. Okay, so I had a good business trip. I was in Manchester, England, shortly before they make you turn off your cell phone. I texted my wife just to let her know, hey, I'm on my way. And I just kind of texted it out, pancakes for dinner. just to let her know everything went great. I've got great news to share. And we took off, and mid-flight, I took out the phone again, and I just started toying with the idea of pancakes for dinner. I mean, it's been a part of my life, this food. And how can I expand on that idea? And I wrote the book on the notes on my smartphone. And it was very non-traditional. But pancakes for dinner, it might not be traditional for everybody either. So I was taking this subject line, pancakes for dinner for you and me, pancakes for dinner, so it shall be. And then it just kind of started going from there, and shared it with Barbara Terry at Waldorf Publishing in Grapevine, Texas. And she saw the potential in it, and she asked me, she said, did you know that pancakes were the second most Googled food? And I said, I had no idea. And she says, yeah, that's why we're going to work with this project. And I said, great.
Was it difficult finding a publisher? Because, you know, we hear many stories about authors getting rejection letters and so many times. And as you mentioned, writing a children's book is sometimes more difficult than writing a novel or a thriller. So was it hard to get your foot in the door?
With this publisher, it was not hard for me to get my foot in the door, surprisingly. And you're right. It is hard. I mean, the art of writing is rewriting, and you're not just rewriting your manuscript. You're rewriting your query letter as well. And you're pitching, and you're putting yourself out there, or you're just doing it yourself. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either. There are disadvantages to doing that, absolutely, from a marketing standpoint. Companies will always have more money than you will as a person, but it definitely has to start with belief in what you're doing. And you can fight. It's an uphill battle, but you can do it. In my case with Pancakes for Dinner, like I said before, I mean, it's completely non-traditional anyway from a project. The process of writing it was on a phone, not a computer. And then pitching it was totally not professional. I didn't write a query letter. I just called her up and said, hey, listen, I've got a great idea for you. And I just believed in it. And it's complete. Anybody listening, you don't do it that way. You don't call them. They will hang up. But I don't know. Maybe I was lucky and she answered and she was hooked. She thought it was, she saw the potential in it. But Barbara is a marketing person by nature. So she's not looking at the manuscript first. She looks at the end result. And I think that's what publishers are doing now anyway. Who can read this? Who will buy this? And how can I best position it to the mass audience so that we can achieve more success?
If you wouldn't mind treating us by reading Pancakes for Dinner.
Absolutely.
We would love that.
I would love to do that. And the cover is two little girls that kind of represent, you know, my Ava and Zoe, our two youngest. We have four children. And they kind of run the show. I'm just the guy that carries bags and drives them to places. That's basically what my world is right now. And these two girls are just really kind of, you know, from an illustrative standpoint to kind of describe for listeners, they've got their dad kind of cornered in the kitchen and they're trying to convince him that, you know, they want pancakes for dinner. And so one of the kids is raising her hand. She says, pancakes for dinner for you and me. Pancakes for dinner, so it shall be, says dad. Some like them fluffy, some like them flat. I like them buttery, can't argue with that. They can be golden and crusty and warm to the belly. Top them with marshmallows or even green jelly. Kids go, ew. And I always say, don't knock it till you try it. They can be round or roundish in all kinds of shapes. Share them with friends or a family of apes. Take bitty bites or big bites, whatever you please. Fold them like tacos and stuff them with cheese. Pile them high, stack them low. Hold one next to the moon, watch it glow. Pancakes can be for dinner, but don't eat too fast. A stack can go quickly. You want them to last. Cut them in half, eat them in pieces. Smother them with berries and share them with nieces. Pancakes are perfect when it's cold outside or when it's hot on a beach next to the tide. Pancakes for dinner when you want to celebrate, for a job well done or any special date. You can have them for dessert as long as it's first. Guzzle down syrup to quench your thirst. Add chocolate chips or berries of blue. Mix in some bananas. It's all up to you. Eat them till you're full and you start to wobble. But what shall we have for breakfast? That's easy. Waffles. And there it is.
And The pictures, because obviously you were doing radio here, some great pictures here. Did you have a special artist that you're working with?
This was the first time I didn't get to choose the illustrator for this project. Leaving it to the publishers at Wal, you know, the people at Waldorf, they're the experts. This was also kind of, you know, my first time working with this publishing company. I wanted to see what they were about and how they would interpret it. And it's kind of my favorite part, right? You know, it's kind of hard to tell an illustrator to be creative when you put a lot of restrictions on them. So I just let it fly. I just let them take it. And I think they did a wonderful job. The illustrator for this project is illustrating my next project, which is called Pizza for Breakfast. And that comes out next September. So I've seen some preliminary sketches of that as well. From a process standpoint, I liked that they shared sketches with me before sending me final galleys. Some authors don't even get that, you know, say so. But especially younger types of authors, right? I mean, if you're not as established, then, you know, it just all kind of depends. But in this case, I loved the fact that they shared the initial sketches and asked me for my feedback to see if, you know, what I thought, are we in alignment with what you thought about? And I appreciated that. So, you know, I really liked the process that they chose.
But seems so far, Philip, and we're all so proud of you, the fact that, my gosh, you've done so great for yourself, and they love you. And some of the posts that I've saw on Facebook, you were traveling to Australia, traveling to Manchester, as you mentioned, all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I work for my day gig, right, is a software company in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And they let me work from my kitchen, which is great. So working from El Paso, you know, I get the best of all worlds, and I'm knocking on wood there. But they also allow me the freedom to do what I do from a creative standpoint. And when I go out of town, which can be often, I mean, there are those times where I'll go to an Australia or to the UK and just every other place in between, except for Asia so far. They say, you know, if you want to piggyback and stay a few days, go to a school, a library, or things like that, then I'm totally there, and they're completely fine with it. I mean, they want to keep me as an employee happy as well, and I want to keep them happy. And, you know, keeping me happy, it means allowing me to write.
Tell me a little bit about as far as because we all know that children love to have grandma, grandpa, mom and dad read a nighttime story. But it's come to the point now with technology where we have audiobooks. And so now if you're taking a trip, road trip, you put in an audiobook and somebody else reads a story. But sometimes it all depends on who's reading that story as to whether or not the story is good or not, because sometimes it can be such a well-written story, and if the narrator is not as good, then, well, perhaps they didn't get into that story. And you can also have a very good narrator, and the story is not that good, but he turns it into an awesome story.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, it really does go back to our own interpretation and imagination. And one of the things that I do with students all the time is I run them through an imagination exercise. And Eugenia Scott, you know, hopefully she's listening. She's in Dallas now. She was my third grade teacher, and she read to us. And she was the first person to really, aside from my parents, of course, but from a teacher standpoint, she read. And the challenge was to imagine everything that was coming out of her mouth, every sound that we heard, every word that she read. The challenge was to imagine it and see it in your mind. And she told us to close our eyes. And I think the reason why some people get turned off by audiobooks or on by audiobooks, okay, because you're right, it does depend on who's interpreting these words. But when you allow somebody to do the imagining for you, that can be a little dicey. When you've read a book, and anybody listening on this program out there who's read a book, which you probably have, we all have our internal voice and our imagination, our brains assign different sounds for these characters. They sound different. They look different. An author might not have described Tom Sawyer, okay? But in our mind's eye, we see Tom Sawyer. We see that shaggy hair. We see that barefooted kid with the coveralls, and he's kind of raggedy. He might look like somebody that we know, but our brain, our mind assigned the character and all aspects of that character, from the sound of his voice to the dirt under his fingernails. That's who we're seeing. And when we see it on screen later, another adaptation of it, generally we're a little disappointed because that wasn't my main character. That's not what my brain, or that's not what I envisioned as my main character. And so audiobooks are awesome. I love them. I've listened to them myself. But you're right. It does depend on who's reading them. Somebody can do that story a huge disservice. But I don't think anything will ever replicate our imagination.
And you're absolutely right. It used to be that audiobooks were very boring because it was somebody just reading, and then perhaps you hear a beep when it was time to change the tape, whatever. But now they've become dramatized or using sound effects.
Full-on productions.
So it's become a lot of like old-time radio dramas from the 1950s and 1940s, and some of them are just incredible. Again, as I forgot what author I interviewed, but she said, you know, I don't like to listen to audiobooks because it's completely different. The character they create is completely different from the one I created in my mind.
Right.
And so, again, as you mentioned, perspective is, you know, frame of reference.
It is a frame of reference, but, you know, from a business standpoint and from a, you know, from a sellability or a marketing standpoint, some of your best feature films that were made from books, that stemmed from a book, the best ones had author involvement, serious author involvement in that process. And so I think when it comes to audiobooks, they need to take a page from that and say, hey, Philip, or whoever it was that wrote the book, what do you think about this? Okay, because oftentimes when they get it right, they allow the author to have a major part, if not the part, in writing the screenplay, the screen adaptation or of the play or the book or whatever it was. When you have that collaboration, it's awesome.
If you wouldn't mind giving us perhaps a web page, a Facebook page where people can go and find out more about your books.
Sure. Website is philipcortes.com. Not to be confused by the Texas, somewhere in San Antonio, there's another Philip Cortes who's a politician, and I am the polar opposite of a politician. No disrespect to politicians. But it's Philip with two L's, Philip Cortes. And then on social media, the handle's just Philip D. Cortes, D for Dominic, Philip with two L's. Whether that's Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, it's just the .com/Philip D. Cortes, and you can find me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here
today. Thank you so much. It's always great to be home.
We've been visiting with Philip Cortes, one of our alums, and the author of the recent book, Pancakes for Dinner, soon to come up, Pizza for Breakfast. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.